Day, May 24, 2007. Welcome members who are here. Welcome members of the public. We are going to start off with a public hearing and work session for Senate Bill 755A. Mr. Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 755A provides for staggered termination of service for pilot education service district (PSD) board members beginning in 2008. Extends legislative reporting requirement, allows appointed board member to promote or oppose candidates or political measures in the same manner as elected board members until 2012, declares an emergency, and is effective on passage. There is a consensus amendment before the committee. It's a sixth amendment, which keeps the existing language in statute right now regarding the terms for the ESD board members for Willamette and High Desert ESD, and applies a staggered termination of service for the Northwest Regional ESD board members. Specifically, this amendment directs component districts of the Northwest Regional ESD to appoint replacement elected directors and elect replacement elected directors prior to the end of the term of office. Clarify that all of the ESD's reports to legislators should be done biennially of each even-numbered year. Clarify that division of the three pilot ESDs into 7 to 11 zones must be done for Willamette and High Desert prior to 2010 and for Northwest Regional prior to 2012. And as I mentioned before, provide a staggered terms for the board members beginning in 2008, ending in 2012, which will effectively extend the life of this pilot from 2010 to 2012. Again, this is, my understanding, is a consensus amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Mr. Davis, welcome.
Davis?
I'm sorry, Rose. Sorry, Mr. Rose. Ozzie Davis. Why is it of Ozzie Davis?
There's a different Ozzie.
There's a different Ozzie. Ozzie Rose.
Actually, my cousin's Ozzie Smith.
Oh, okay.
Pretty good court or short stuff. For the record, I'm Ozzie Rose with the ESD Association. I reside here in Salem. The amendments before you are the resolution of a disagreement. There is agreement that the bill that passed in the 2005 session, House Bill 3184, to change the way some ESDs do business, will need some cleanup to make it work well. And there were four issues regarding the pilot ESDs. By the way, 3184 applied to all ESDs. Just the pilot concept is about the election and governance. So the rest of the bill stays intact, the local service plan, all that stuff. It's just the governance issue in which we have had the dispute. And there were four things that they wanted corrected. Two of the ESDs think they could be corrected in the 2009 session. One of them feels pretty strongly about the term issue. The bill, as it sits with you, the first part of the bill clarifies that these appointed and or elected by local school district members of the ESD board can take positions on political issues as a board. That they've ruled that they can't because they're not elected by the general public, and this clarifies that they can for that purpose. The second issue is, as 3184 was written, in 2010, these three SDs set up a process to elect their nine members differently. All nine of them would have expired in 2010, and if you chose to continue the 3184 concept of governance, then they would have had to elect their board, re-elect some or whatever. And at that time, you would have to establish staggered terms because staggered terms are necessary. You will still have to do that if you extend this pilot. One of the SDs did not want to wait until 2010 and turn over all their board members at one time. The other two SDs said, we just turned everybody over in 2006. The current board's only operated 7 months, and we shouldn't turn it over halfway through this. They could not agree. By the way, I told them if I'm going to continue to work for them, they're going to raise my pay because it's really hard to write testimony on both sides of an issue. But they have reached agreement, and what this bill does is say Willamette ESD and High Desert ESD will continue as 3184 spelled out for them. And Willamette, or excuse me, Northwest ESD will have two of their members, the elected members, and two of the appointed members. Their terms are going to be cut short. They will elect two of six, and they will be cut short in 2008, and they can run for re-election, but, and then their terms will go to 2012, the others go to 2010, and if you continue this process or governance, they obviously could be run, and that term will be 2010-2014.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. Members, if this is clear enough to you that we could move this now, I'd entertain that. If not, I would like to be courteous to Senator Carter and temporarily suspend this bill and hear Senator Carter's introduction of her bill and come back to this one. So it's.
I have no problem with it.
Representative Lim, are you okay moving
this
bill now?
Yes.
You guys okay with this bill?
Okay. Are you all right moving this bill now, or do you need more information, Representative?
The political involvement, I don't understand.
Could you comment on the
ESD boards in the past were elected by a vote of the people, and they have the rights of school boards, et cetera, and they can express themselves as a board on a political measure.
Such as
Measure 5,
this says
whatever.
A promoter opposed. And I think I'm okay with the board, but this promoter, excuse me, Mr. Chair, may I follow up? It says promoter opposed candidates, not just political measures. Is that what the bill says? I'm looking at the staff's.
It's supposed to be just extending the same rights the other ESD boards have always had. I guess I haven't.
Staff summary. I didn't look at the bill.
It's not in the. I believe Mr. Olson might need to clarify for us here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnant. There is an exemption right now, and if you look on page 2 of the bill, on line 40, it defines previously public employee under that was not allowed to do all these things did not include an elected official. This adds to that, or a person appointed as a director to the board of a pilot education service district. So what that means is whether you are elected or appointed to the board of an ESD, you would not be considered a public employee for the purposes of Section 4 above, which restricts political activities.
I think I'd oppose that.
Very good.
Mr. Chair, the reason I stumble on this, I can't recall any time when a board of a school district or an ESD took a position on a candidate. They take positions on, and I assume they couldn't on candidates, so that's why I'm stumbling. The issue is always talking about made political measures.
I think we're going to pause and come back to this, but I believe this has to do with an individual, not an act of the board. An individual who serves as a board member still
on his own, not as a representative.
Right. Still, as a person, maintains the right. They are not a public employee under this statute.
Okay. Right.
And
I know, like, when I served on the County Commission on Children and Families, go in work session, I apologize.
Yes, we are. That's fine. That's fine.
I was, had the same restrictions as a public employee as far as.
Because you weren't elected.
Yeah. I was appointed.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All the other boards are elected. This one appointed, so it's a beginning.
I was appointed to that board, to the county commission, by the county.
Yeah, elected officials have the ability to do things that appointed don't.
Well, actually, what this bill would do, if it's agreed, is it would add a person appointed as a director of the board.
In this case. Because of the special way we're appointing him rather than electing him in the public.
That's
instead of giving him the same status, the elected official status.
Can we cannot promote or oppose any Republican, Democrat.
They can do the same thing you can do.
You okay with that?
So we're not. That was already an existing.
Right. Exactly.
Except that because they were appointed, there was a confusion as to whether they were a public employee or not. And this is saying these are not public employees in that sense. They are elected officials in that sense.
Okay. Tell me then what an elected. I think it should be the same as an elected school board.
And that's what this would do.
That's what this does.
Okay. Thank you.
Very good.
And Mr. Chair, that's in the text of 755A. The amendment does not change that.
Correct. Vice Chair Cobb, do you have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move the A6s?
Yes.
A6 amendments into House Senate Bill 755A.
Vice Chair Copps, move the A6 amendment to Senate Bill 755A. Is there any discussion?
Put on the record, Mr. Rose, not Ozzie Smith, Ozzie Rose, said he promised me that High Desert's okay with this.
That's on the record, Representative.
They are, Representative.
Further discussion? Any opposition to the amendment? Hearing no opposition, so amended. Vice Chair Comp.
I move Senate Bill 755A to the House floor with a due pass recommendation as amended.
Vice Chair Comp has moved Senate Bill 755A to the House floor with a due pass as amended recommendation. Is there discussion? Hearing none. Andy, would you please call the roll?
Representative Clem.
Excused.
Representative Dolan.
Excused.
Representative Greenlight.
Aye.
Representative Comp.
Aye.
Representative Krummel?
Aye.
Representative
Lynn?
Aye.
Representative Roblin?
Aye.
Representative
Glitchman?
Aye.
Chair
Hudson?
Aye. The motion carries. Representative Roblin, would you be kind enough to carry this to the floor for us? Thank you very much. I'm going to close the public hearing work session on Senate Bill 755A and open a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 724A. And I'll invite Senator Carter to step forward when she has a chance there. And Mr. Olson, if you'd summarize the bill for us, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 724A permits the issuance of teaching, personnel service, or administrative license or registration to a person convicted of a misdemeanor prostitution if the Teachers Standards and Practices Commission determines that the person is fit to be a teacher and the date of the conviction is more than 5 years prior to the date of the application to Teachers Standards and Practices Commission. Allows school district to employ or contract with a person convicted of misdemeanor prostitution if the district determines that person is fit to be employed or to contract with district and the date of conviction is more than 5 years prior to the date of employment or date contract is entered into. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Welcome to the House Education Committee.
Thank you, Representative Buckley. Good afternoon, members of the committee. I want to thank you so very much for hearing this bill today, Senate Bill 724A. It's the Second Chance Act, or what I like to refer to it as an act of forgiveness. For the record, my name is Margaret Carter. I represent Senate District 22, North Northeast Portland. Senate Bill 724 is truly about forgiveness. I'm going to have my presentation. I didn't have a chance to get it a copy to give you guys copies of it, but I will make sure that my staff does that so you can have it.
Thank you.
This bill truly allows for a case-by-case examination of each person that is making application to the Teacher Standards in Practices Commission. The reason I brought this bill, this is now the second term, is because in Multnomah County, a young woman who had been working for 13 years on her job, who was, when she was young, had an indiscretion where she was forced by a pimp on the street to go into prostitution. Another young man who is now at Drexel College in New Jersey, who wrote and said, Senator Carter, I would one day like to be a high school teacher. I am a college professor and changed my life because both of my parents were involved in drugs. And I went into indiscretions to make sure I could finish high school. Another person wrote that I am a 42-year-old white female. I've been a white slave virtually my entire life. My father and his friends who started selling me when I was 3 years old used to brag and laugh of the methods they would use to trap women. And she said, I sincerely applaud your efforts to eliminate one of the avenues for black male extortion and enslavement. I now am living a very respectable life whose husband's income is above $100,000 a year. And I can now afford to be a volunteer. But I can't be a volunteer because of that youthful indiscretion when I didn't have any control over my own life. Another young man wrote me and said, Senator Carter, thank you for putting yourself on the line because I hear a lot of people all the time say that they're Christians and they're willing to forgive when in reality they are not. And so I took my bill off the floor the last time, ladies and gentlemen, because there were people who would say, oh, my God, I cannot support this. Oh, I'll get in trouble with my voters if I do this. And I was saying, here are young people who are now in their 30s and 40s who had these indiscretions and who've changed their lives and said, I want to make a difference because I believe I can identify with young people by the time they get in middle school and high school who are making the kind of decisions that I made. And I'd like to be there for them, to be able to help them. I can identify with them in a way, Senator Carter, in which a person who's never had any life experiences can. I don't want to ever be illegal again. I want to be legal. I've gone to college, completed my degrees, have changed my life, have tried to make sure that I have not come face-to-face with the law enforcement system since my misdemeanor, not felony, misdemeanor. And I want to be able to teach school. As such, I want you to try it again. Hence my coming back a second term to get this bill passed. These people reminded me over and over again about how they could be role models for young people who are seeking a road that is less traveled by those of us who said, I've never been in trouble, I've never faced the law, and actually I'm one of those people who can say that. But I don't say it in a way that I'm gloating or being boastful. I just haven't. But does it mean that those who have should not be given a second chance? And my decision was based, I should tell you, ladies and gentlemen, I go to church, I direct a choir, and I try to live my life in a way, the examples that were set before me in biblical teaching is, and that is that forgiveness is mine, saith the Lord. And I try very hard. This is the first time in my 22 years of being in the legislature that I have ever brought religion and politics face to face. But I had to do it in explaining this issue to many of my colleagues who say they have to think about it. I am willing at this point in time in my life to say, you know, an act of forgiveness is an act of forgiveness. If a person has straightened up their lives with the law and there is nothing else on their record to keep them from being outstanding, upstanding citizens, and most of all, may I add, I am 71. I want my retirement. I want every one of those bugaboos working so they can help substantiate the system so I'll get my retirement. So I want everybody that can to be in the revenue sharing system. We have enough people that are sitting around today. May I also remind you that Oregon is the only state in the West Coast that does not provide for a case-by-case review in these circumstances. The only state. The state that touts itself as a human rights state is the only state. California and Washington does. So does Nevada and Ohio. And I feel as if those people are no more on the right side of right than we are here in Oregon. And that's why, ladies and gentlemen, I bring this bill to you again today. I really do feel that this is an equitable solution, particularly for individuals who may have been convicted of prostitution at a young age. We are seeing many people make career changes in their lives. And we do not want to deny licensure to someone who has spent so many years away from crime and who is committed to education. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I will close my remarks and we'll hear from the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission and from the Oregon Law Center. And these are the technical people, and I remember this bill because we've done it, but I'd just like for you to have the lawyers here so that maybe they might be a little more believable than me and can answer the technical questions, but I'll stay here freely at your disposal to answer whatever questions you might have.
Thank you, sir. You're not pressed for time. You're okay, because I could have the panel ask you questions now.
Thank you. They can. Then I can go.
All right.
Yes, they can.
Very good. Any questions for the senator? Vice Chair Kahn.
Thank you, Chair Buckley. Senator, thank you. From the bottom of my heart, thank you. Can you give us any
reason why this was not passed? I mean, why didn't this move forward last session? What was the biggest barrier you faced?
The biggest barrier I faced the last time around were there were people who truly felt that if they were to vote for this bill, even though it came out of committee, number one, with Republican and Democratic support, mm-hmm. when it came to the floor, there were members on both sides who said, if I have to hold my nose, I might can do that. But I didn't want to put them in a position where it would be considered a hardship. So I called it off the floor only to come over to see if the House would pass it. And the education chair at that time did not want to pass the bill out. Okay. And so I said, I'll wait and do a little educating and bring it back this session. And that's why I didn't go forward with the last session.
Thank you, Senator. Any other questions from the committee?
Sorry, I just want to comment and answer to your question, Madam Vice Chair. We carried a bill on the floor to help people with a particular kind of eye problem get a driver's license. And I'm still hearing about sponsoring a bill to let blind people drive. I mean, and I'm sure this is going to be the same way, and that's what people were. Oh, you want all the prostitutes to be school teachers now? Well, sort of. That's not exactly the vote, but I'm sure that's what's on people's mind.
I'm sure
that's the kind of nonsense that makes folks who worry about it worry.
Right. And the representative is right. But what is in place is the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, as people make application, you have to have a background check. You have to have a background check. And that information, and both at this, the NCI test take in consideration the state and local. And so what I can understand from some amendments that are coming, they say that the amendments are that national testing is not a part of it. So I wouldn't have a problem with that, Madam Chair, but I just need to work it out more and look at who will have some problems with it. And I haven't had a chance to totally see that. But I think that piece is important. And I think the foremost thing to remember, we are talking about a felony crime. I mean, sort of a misdemeanor crime and not a felony crime whatsoever.
Representative Lim.
Thank you for bringing this bill. But are we limiting this to the... what it says, misdemeanor prostitution only, or does it include any others?
Misdemeanor prostitution. And Senator, one thing I was saying also is that you would have to have 5 years behind you before you're even eligible under these circumstances to apply for teacher certification.
Okay, follow-up question.
Yes.
Why couldn't we include some of the people? Why do we specify only the misdemeanor prostitution only instead of widening up some
others? Exactly. Well, one of the things, Senator, I didn't have anybody else coming to me in terms of other misdemeanor actions, and so we were just trying to get these fees because it really makes sense because some of the people who worked at the county had a misdemeanor because of smoking marijuana, and they said that they should have been included because they have not been involved with any kind of misdemeanor conviction since that time too. So I just didn't get a chance to do it, but if it had been broader, you're right, that would have been nice.
Okay, one more question.
Yes, Senator.
I understand this is...
I'm teasing you now.
I'm confused.
Which chamber are you in?
Okay. Why does it have a 5 years only? Where the 5 years coming from? What's the justification for 5 years?
Right. The 5 year comes from the fact that it takes at least 4 years to finish a bachelor's degree, and if a person went on to a master's degree, it would be enough time between the conviction itself and a person having a chance to clear their lives and put 5 years behind them, a clean life. If there's another technical aspect to this, then the technical experts will
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your great questions, Representative Lim. Representative Greenlick and then Roblin, if you're okay with that.
Right now, if somebody is convicted of a misdemeanor prostitution or soliciting prostitution, as it points out, this isn't just for the women. And they're teaching now. They would be suspended now.
Yes, they could be. If somebody finds it out, like, as in the case of the young woman from Multnomah County, that somebody went into her record and saw it, and she had been there for 13 years working with kids and have had no other convictions in her life, graduated from college, had a job and a home and children, and just really doing well.
No, but I was talking about a concurrent conviction. If somebody is a teacher, they've been a teacher for 10 years.
Right.
And they now are convicted of a... say, soliciting prostitution charge, they would automatically be suspended?
Absolutely.
Your license is revoked.
And then could they come back 5 years from now under this and ask for a reconsideration?
Oh, it would be taken on a case-by-case basis. The Teacher Standards and Practices Commission would have to view the case, take it before their commission to see if it was worthy of being
revoked. But this would make that person eligible.
That's exactly right. That's what this would do.
Thank you, Representative Greenlick. Representative Roblin?
Yes, I also want to say thank you. I think that from my religious tenets as well, forgiveness is a big part of this whole thing. But even more than that, education is about new beginnings, and it's about starting over. And, you know, as a high school principal, I had a lot of kids that made a lot of bad choices along the way. And my goal was always to help them make the best choice, the next choice they had to make. And it wasn't about condemning them for the last choice, but rewarding them for the best new choice. And that's what education is all about. And hopefully people learn from things in their life. And when they change and do the right things, we need to be there to say you've done the right things and let's move on together.
Absolutely.
Having, you know, your stories are compelling alone, but having known so many kids that have had different kinds of things happen in their lives that create situations that I contend that anybody put in the same position, many would have made a lot worse choices than some of these people have made. And it is remarkable that some of them make it through school at all, and then that they turn their life around and can finish a four-year degree and do these other things is pretty remarkable.
Absolutely.
Because generally they don't have a lot of other support. It's choices that they've made internally to do that. So I again commend you for this.
I appreciate that. I remember my father. I come from a long line of ministers. My father, my brother, my stepfather, my cousin, my uncle, all ministers. And so our family lived a tight-knit Southern Baptist life. And I remember my mother and my father saying that we were going to rehearsal, choir rehearsal, and instead I went with my older sisters, and they took me by a nightclub. I didn't know what nightclubbing was all about, but I went. And my mother whipped my two older sisters and said, "You had no business," and whipping was okay in the South in those days, and I have to confess, as a grandmother, I believe in spankings too. And so then she lighter spanked the other two kids. She said, "Because you were old enough to bring them home." And then she spanked me and my brother because she said, "The two of you could have come by yourself if they hadn't even brought you." And the reason I'm making this point, if my parents had not forgiven me for some of the things that I did in my childhood, I could be living with guilt today. And so I know that except for the grace of God, there go I with whatever kind of things in life that have happened to people. So who am I to stand in judgment of them? I try hard not to do that. So I appreciate you guys listening to this bill today, and would hopefully that you can pass this measure and give some young people an opportunity to make a difference in our state.
Thank you so much, Senator.
Thank you.
Thanks for bringing this forward.
Thanks. You're in good hands with these two capable people.
We are not afraid. Well, which one wants to go first?
I guess I'll go first. Chair, my name is George Finch, and I'm the Coordinator of Professional Practices. I'm with the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. The memo that we passed out earlier was written by myself and given to the Executive Director, who couldn't be here today. And I believe that was her testimony that was submitted to you previously, but it's just a couple. So if you have any questions specifically for TSPC or about the memo.
Any questions for TSPC members?
I think it'd be helpful for us to go over, you know, what how people are treated now. What's, you know, so what's the situation now before the bill?
Currently, because misdemeanor prostitution is on the list of crimes for which we automatically disqualify someone for teaching, they would not be eligible to apply.
Forever.
Okay. Representative Greenlick?
They would never be able to apply.
That's correct.
Yeah. Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wisner.
Mr. Finch, I agree with the senator bringing this, and it's very good as a person who is a Christian himself. But I wonder why it would have been so much easier if we'd have just said we're passing a bill to give people a second chance that have a this crime without being specific. Because as Representative Greenlick said, we were going to talk about people who had smoked marijuana or something like that. And why did we do this? Why did we? If we're gonna have a policy, why do we point? Because that's not. We're not gonna. There's other things we're gonna forgive besides prostitution, pimping, and there's other things. So, is that not correct?
Ms. Finch, would you want to reply from the memo, or would you like Mr. Olson to clarify?
Chair, I'm. Yeah, perhaps someone else would. We don't typically get into the policy behind the.
Mr. Olson?
Perhaps maybe I should just read what it says. Notwithstanding subsection 3 of this section, a person who's been convicted of a crime under ORS 167.007 or attempt to commit crime, et cetera, et cetera. And then it goes on. And when you look at that section of the law,
we do have it in Ms. Chamberlain's memo. It is
listed
on the front page.
A person commits a crime of prostitution if A, the person engages in or offers or agrees to engage in sexual contact, in return for a fee, or B, the person pays or offers or agrees to pay for a fee to engage in sexual conduct or sexual contact. Someone who's a lawyer could correct me, but I don't believe this includes the crime of pimping.
Can I explain, please?
Yes,
Mr.
Please.
Chair. For the record, my name is John Christensen, and I serve as Chief of Staff for Senator Carter. Right now, existing in the statute, there are three forms of crimes of prostitution. One is a misdemeanor, which is the I don't particularly like these kind of terms, but a streetwalker or someone who does indiscretion. Another form is a Class B felony, and another one I think is a Class A felony. The Class B felony would be as it was phrased, and again, I'm from Virginia. We're real polite in Virginia. But it's the pimp. Someone who engages in institutionalizing prostitution. That's a felony. And what happened 2 years ago, the wire service ran this as a felony. Senator Carter is not speaking about a felony, and she's not speaking about the pimp. The other form of felony is prostitution that involves bringing children
Correct.
Into an act. And that's a Class A felony. And Senator Carter is not speaking about that type of action. And we're only talking about a misdemeanor. And I just want to clarify that.
There Chair, can I ask you a question?
Representative Greenlee.
We have this list of other crimes. Listen, ORS 342-064.
I don't know where that list came from, but I haven't seen it.
But maybe I can ask it.
Yes, sir.
Are there any other misdemeanors that are automatic exclusion?
Someone from the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission will probably have to answer that. Off the top of my head, I would say yes.
He's sitting right beside you.
I would say yes.
Yes, sir.
But this is a particular form of misdemeanor that Senator Carter is seeking a sense of forgiveness about, based on cases that have been brought to her. I know in what was distributed.
Could I ask one answer?
Yes, sir.
question.
Absolutely.
Are there other misdemeanors in that list?
Chairman, Representative Green, like, I have in front of me the actual list of mandatory crimes, and so we basically look for a match between any conviction, whether or not they're a misdemeanor or felony. Offhand, I'm not 100% sure. I'd actually have to look up their classification.
We do the law center.
Chair Buckley, Representative Green, with members of the committee, Civil Hub for the Oregon Law Center. My expertise is in the civil law arena, and so I also would need to consult, but it's in looking at this string of statutes, I believe I recognize some that are misdemeanors. I don't have any of their particular descriptions in front of me, but I believe that there are other misdemeanors in this list.
Thank you, Ms. Hedges.
I think that was Mr. what Representative Rusnett was asking about.
Correct. Representative, do you have an answer to your question now? This bill focuses on the 167.007.
I guess I have a problem with that. If I'm going to forgive.
You want to forgive? Can we expand the bill for Representative Wisnett here?
And I think another question I'd want to have the discuss this issue. Did you open a work session again? A work session?
We are in a public hearing.
Mr.
Chair, if I can just elaborate a tad bit more. I am familiar with the statutes. The individual, I just met the gentleman today from Teacher Standard Practice Commission. The actual executive director, Vicki Chamberlain, is preparing for surgery, so she isn't here. But she did advise me that other misdemeanors are within that list. And I've looked over some of them, and some of them are misdemeanors. But, again, the focus is just specifically on this particular section.
Another question I'd have for this group, I think, Chair, is... the senator mentioned other states have the same, some similar legislation. And do they have 5 years, or is it a longer period? And do they do specifically this crime, or do they look at other crimes?
I'm not familiar in detail with other states. I will tell you that California and Washington, Idaho and Nevada do allow for a case-by-case situation with this misdemeanor. As far as the history of the five-year period, when Senator Carter first introduced this bill 2 years ago, there was not a hiatus, a time period between the conviction, and as she explained, she took it back. When it was reintroduced again this session, it was not in the bill. But members of the Senate and Senator Carter, based on what she explained is a sufficient time period, decided to add that in their wisdom. And so that's why the bill is an A rather than 24. So the five-year period was actually added on the Senate side.
Very good. You said you haven't had a chance to testify yet, have you?
Constable.
We'd love to hear your testimony, and we'll continue with the questions after.
Thank you, Chair Buckley, members of the committee. I appreciate that, and I'll respect the committee's time. I'll first start off indicating that I'm supportive of the bill. I work for the Oregon Law Center, which is a statewide law firm that provides services, civil legal services, to low-income Oregonians, and our mission is to help our clients, underprivileged, vulnerable Oregonians, to achieve economic and social justice. And so one issue that we're really concerned about is how to remove barriers for people to move on in their lives and to take care of themselves and their families in a way that's responsible and healthy and safe. And the particular reason that I'm interested in this bill, I think, may also speak to the question that Representative Wisnett and others have raised, which is why are we concerned specifically about this particular misdemeanor crime? And the reason I'm particularly interested in this bill is that a large category of our clients, unfortunately, are victims of sexual assault, domestic violence, trafficking, and other forms of abuse. And we prioritize the services to people who are the neediest, and so therefore those people who are in severe dangerous situations are a category of clients we prioritize above others. And so I've understood in looking at this issue that there is a great crossover between people who are convicted or engaged in prostitution and people who are victims of severe abuse. And statistics, in fact, show, and I believe you have materials in front of you that show some statistics, that almost 90% of people who are engaged in prostitution are victims of sexual assault, of incest and child abuse and other forms of abuse. And very often people fall into that practice because they have no other choice, either to protect themselves because someone is forcing them in, or they're young, they're not able to maintain or support themselves, and this is unfortunately a crime in which they sort of fall prey to people who are predators, and then they later get charged with and convicted of crimes themselves. And so many of our clients who have been victims of abuse in the past may suffer this threat of falling into prostitution. And so we're interested particularly in helping people who have been convicted of prostitution because they have been victims in the past. And we think that this bill helps the education system to look at that broader realm of circumstances and make a determination on a case-by-case basis whether or not the person who has the conviction is someone who may have had those circumstances related to their being convicted and who has also further taken great steps to move beyond that. So certainly supportive of expansion of that discretion and looking at other misdemeanor crimes, and clearly there are other issues that end up forcing people into other crimes, but this particular crime is one that is very closely associated with being a victim, so that's why we're particularly supportive of the bill. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hatt. Questions for this panel? Confusion? just to again emphasize, this bill would allow for a case-by-case review. This is not a blanket waiver.
That's
of
correct.
The elimination of consideration for license due to the misdemeanor. Case-by-case, correct?
Yes.
That's correct.
Thank you, Ms. Evans.
Yes, thank you.
And Mr. Chair, if I can, I'd like to reiterate the material that Senator Carter distributed to you. If you look at the information and also the information from the Oregon Law Center, a very high percentage of individuals that were in a particular survey that we've given you were victims of incest themselves.
87%.
It was very high.
That's a very high percentage. Yeah. Further questions? Representative Lim?
Okay. Concerning the definition, misdemeanor of prostitution, and I read some of it over here. And are they considered in a broad terms as sex offenders?
Chair Buckley, Representative Lim, I believe that's not the case, that they are not. If misdemeanor perpetrators, so to speak, of prostitution are not considered sex offenders, to my knowledge. Again, my expertise is in the civil arena and not the criminal, but that's my best understanding of that circumstance.
Okay, follow-up questions?
Representative Lim?
My concern is that the perception of the public and institution of the school. Parents might be deeply concerned. And if someone, I'm not sure that definition you are giving, whether misdemeanor prostitution is considered as a sex offender or not, I don't have any clear on that. But sometimes sex offenders, they are publicized in a website and plus many others.
Chair Buckley, Representative Lim, I'm absolutely certain that people convicted of misdemeanor prostitution crimes are not registered sex offenders. Registered sex offenders who are required to be, you know, have their information available on the web are a highly serious form of sex offense, and they've been convicted of those much more serious sex offense crimes. This is not, I don't believe this is even qualified as a sex offense at all. Even if it were, it wouldn't be of a serious enough nature that it would be required to be the perpetrator or the defendant to be registered.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Representative.
Mr. Chair, I might be able to
clarify
that a little bit.
Please go ahead.
Representative. The registered sex offenders that we, for example, that are on the Oregon State website and that are on most county sites are offenders who are or who have been involved in violent assaults against other people. It doesn't necessarily have to be
It doesn't necessarily have to be opposite sex. So a person who has assaulted another person sexually, and it's been more violent, those are the perpetrators that are considered sex offenses. And there are the same type of levels and misdemeanors as well as felonies. But most of them are now felonies. And so that's why, and when they do prison time, they are required then to register as sex offenders for life. And so that gives you a little bit of a clarification, I hope, Representative.
Thank you, Representative Kimmel. Representative Dolan.
Yeah, I want to talk about a couple of things.
I wouldn't say it,
though. First, TSPC screens for school districts, and when they send us a teacher that they have certified, guaranteed, school district now has some certainty of the people they're hiring, and the school district's primary obligation is not to take care of the person they send us, but is to take care of the students in our charge.
Yes.
And I've had a long conversation, certainly not germane to this subject, but perhaps germane to this subject, is with my L.A. pastor. She's deep into forgiveness, but I'm a superintendent. Mm-hmm. I can't risk this with kids. I don't want to deny anyone the right, but if we forgive this crime or this indiscretion, I'm even reluctant to use the term crime, or this accident of the past or circumstance, what others will we not know about? Because certainly there will be others to follow. Being involved, and I think the classic example is stealing bread for a hungry family. Shouldn't we forgive that? But I need a certified guarantee. And I hire a teacher that my children are safe. If I give this exception, why shouldn't I give TCP the power, or Teacher Standards and Practices, the authority and the power to adjudicate each and every crime to determine fitness? Because certainly all that have committed a crime, we would hope, would someday come to some realization that past behavior's got to be left behind and they want to start anew. Then where would I be?
Chair Buckley, Representative Dowell, and the members, I think I can speak to your question from a couple of perspectives. And one is that this is a bill that would simply remove an ultimate barrier. And so this crime would no longer be an absolute prohibition. What it would not remove the discretion of the board to make a determination whether or not that individual in front of them was someone they thought was worthy of being a teacher and setting a model for children. And so I think the bill is about saying we recognize, if the committee chooses to do this, recognize that prostitution is a crime that may particularly be irrelevant, or not irrelevant, but may not be particularly, ultimately, absolutely always tied to whether or not a person is fit to be a teacher. And it allows simply that in certain circumstances, if it's only a misdemeanor conviction and 5 years have passed, it allows that the board put that question to themselves with respect to that particular individual.
Why would I not broaden the scope and open up a larger class of crimes? Because certainly if a person is 5 years out on criminal behavior, why should they not be extended this privilege also? Because we're all an accident of our social situation. So why are we making this such a narrow field when there are others that are equally deserving of a second chance?
I think from my perspective, the reason that this particular crime, as I said before, is one that is maybe less specifically connected to someone's fitness is that it is so frequently, 90% of the time, almost 90% of the time, a crime that someone is convicted of because they have been a victim of that very same behavior and they haven't had a choice in the matter.
I think I can make that argument for almost any criminal behavior, can't I?
I'm not sure that's the case. I don't think that's the case.
Would you like to respond? Please, go ahead.
Yes. I've looked at the statutes, and I'm not an expert, but let me give you a contrast, and forgive me if I'm being subjective. If pornography is a misdemeanor, and it may be, and I think it is in some cases, that's a totally different situation, at least for myself, than a situation of an individual who, as it's hard to say, as Senator Carter reported to you, and we've been emailed, a 3-year-old who's passed around by her father or among his friends and learns a behavior, doesn't understand a behavior as she grows up and is pulled into a life that she doesn't understand. And then she's able to break out of it and then move into a different life. It's a different kind of situation. Our judgment is similar to the Oregon Law Center. These are frequently, most often, victims. They're not victimizers or ones who necessarily victimize other people, except from an experience of their own. I mean, it's a difficult situation.
I want to pursue that just a moment if I can, Mr.
Chair. One more follow-up. I've got two other members who want to ask questions.
Oh, go ahead. One more follow-up.
Go ahead. Thank you. I'm sorry, I was waiting for the other question. And I'm in deep thought here. I have sat in the position where it has been said to me, you know, or you should have known, and these are our children. And that's a grave responsibility. And I have to turn this light around and look at it through the prism of our children. The social case that you make is horrifying.
I totally agree with you, sir, in terms of that decision-making process.
One time that this doesn't work, one time that there's an offense against a child, one time, and we're playing the odds on the wrong side of the loser. I understand.
Possibly, but not always. Because the loser may be the person who was perpetrated upon at an early age of 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 or 12 or 15.
I hear that. But there seems to be a whole spectrum of vocations. Lord knows, I wouldn't want to call my own vocation Lily White. We've had our problems.
I don't think we'd let you.
But there is a whole spectrum of vocations available. I think we're looking at this upside down.
Well,
Thank you. Vice Chair Cobb.
Just a question for anybody on the panel. Are there other misdemeanors such as drinking under the influence and driving that teacher standards and practices makes reviews? Because when I've had people come and ask me that had committed misdemeanors, and they say, do you think I could ever be a teacher, Ms. Comp? And I said, I believe that there is a process through TSPC that so long as you divulge and are clearly up front and have testimony or people to, there is a process that your record can be scrutinized, reviewed, and analyzed to see if you do deem to be fit. Is that true or not?
I might be able to answer that question, Chairman, members of the committee, Representative Comp. We do look at all convictions, including arrests. We look at a person's complete background when they apply. That includes FBI history, Oregon, arrest records, everything. A single DUI wouldn't necessarily disqualify you from becoming a teacher or any particular misdemeanor. If we look and we see a pattern that concerns us, if we look at, and that could be anything, multiple arrests with no convictions, all for the same kind of crimes, then that's something that would concern us. And generally, we would interview the potential applicant, ask for references, ask if they've been to counseling. Well, there's a variety of things that we would do, but there's a considerable process that we go through. That's correct.
Thank you. I thought that's what happened, but I wasn't for sure.
Representative Kremel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So, Mr. Finch, you do in fact actually interview applicants when there's something on their application that raises eyebrows, I guess.
Yes, we do. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
And maybe Ms. Hebb, you can answer this question, or at least I hope you can. Can prostitution be expunged from a record? I know that there are several misdemeanors that can actually be expunged from a record after a period of time has gone by. It takes a court action to do it, but is prostitution one of those?
Representative Cromwell, I believe that it is. And I'll need to check the site and get back to you for an exact answer, but I believe that it is. And my familiarity with the expungement statute is general, but again, it's a case-by-case assessment. So there's a process that people can go through. But I don't know that it is one of the crimes that can be expunged. Unless there's someone in the...
Yeah.
There's a nod in the back of the room.
Representative Dole.
If an expunging act is available, wouldn't our candidate be better off with a court expunged record, which would cover the broad spectrum of anything they might attempt to do in society, rather than? Wouldn't that be a better road to take?
Chair Buckley, Representative Dallum, I frequently encourage people to seek expungement for many purposes, for the benefits of getting into housing, for job applications, et cetera, when I think the criteria, when I think it's an appropriate circumstance. The problem with expungement is that frequently, although it formally removes the record of conviction from the particular court record, now in today's society where so much information is available via the internet, even old records that might be cached, usually we find that the fact of someone's conviction, even if it has been expunged, is still available for people. And so it's still something that gets taken into consideration when making job and housing decisions, if that answers your question. So it's not a complete relief.
Representative Krill.
So that brings up an interesting question back to Mr. Finch. And that is, if a person were convicted of prostitution and went through the process and it was expunged from their record, two questions. Number one is, would they have to disclose that was the case on their application? And if they had been convicted, but the conviction has now been expunged, would they be able to, and they've gone through all the training and they would otherwise qualify, would they be issued a license as a teacher or an administrator or service personnel?
Chairman, Representative, if it's been expunged and we do a background check, it wouldn't show up, so we would have no way of knowing unless they tell us that it's there. This would be the same, for example, if someone gets a DUI, they go through diversion, and then that record is then, after a year, removed from the record. We wouldn't, there would be no record for us to find.
So, may I follow
up,
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you, but because I just recently filled out that application, and one of the questions that's on there is, have you ever been convicted or, I think there's an arrest question also,
arrested.
But there is a conviction question. Have you ever been convicted? There's not a follow-up question that asks if the record has been expunged. And then at the bottom, of course, is the thing that says, I swear that I'm telling you the truth, the whole truth, and that, that you can, probably, do something bad to me if I've lied on this. If a conviction has been expunged, technically there is a conviction, but it's been expunged. The person says, yes, they've been convicted of prostitution, let's say, use as an example. But then, and I think that maybe there is a place on the application.
Mr. Green, you could come join us. We're having a great discussion, and we'd love to have you with us.
But the question is, then, if the record's been expunged and the person checks no, are they then in essence lying on the application? I'm just trying to kind of sort this out because, yes, you do the background check. It's not going to show up, but if they have said that there is a conviction, but later explained that it was expunged, then would they then be, they've told you the truth, it doesn't show up on their record, would they be issued a license if they otherwise qualified?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jim Green with the Oregon School Boards Association. This discussion reminds me back in 1993 when we created this law, and I was the person who wrote the law, working with the Department of Education and TSPC to create the criminal background statutes that you were all looking at. And, Mr. Chairman, Representative Crummell, to your question, if the question is, are you have you ever been convicted and you are expunged of a misdemeanor, the answer is no, I have never been convicted. Because it will not show up, you are not convicted because of the expungement. You only get expungement of a misdemeanor and after 3 years from the conviction of the misdemeanor. So if you would say no and your record was expunged, you are not then false swearing on the application.
Interesting. This is your responsibility, Mr. Green.
Let me give you a little history. Please, back in 1993, we were surrounded by all states that did criminal background checks on school employees. We did none. We did none. And what we were finding out both at the Teacher Standards Practices Commission and at the Department of Education that when they went to Washington, Idaho, or California and found out that a criminal background check was going to be done, they left. And we found out that those folks were coming to Oregon. So what we do now, both at TSPC and at the Department of Education, and for employees in school districts who have direct, unsupervised contact with children, must go through this, or any licensed teacher in the state must go through this. They do a criminal background check. That means they submit their fingerprint cards. Those fingerprint cards then go to the FBI for a nationwide search, as well as what we call a law enforcement data system check, LEDS check in the state. And it is a one-time check, it's a photo in time, and if you are convicted of any of the crimes listed in ORS 342, I believe it's 143, and there's a laundry list in that statute, you are precluded from being a school employee, either a licensed teacher or a classified employee in the state of Oregon. You look down that list of crimes, and there are some misdemeanors on that list. And there are mostly felonies that deal with very, very bad people who have done very bad things to children. That's why we created that list. There was a work group of individuals from around the state that represented both licensed administrators, licensed teachers, classified employees, the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, the Department of Education, the Oregon School Boards Association, that alphabet soup of K-12 folks sat down and evaluated the list. And we came up with that list. And that's the list that's currently in statute today. What they're looking at taking away in this bill is one of the misdemeanor crimes. Can that crime be expunged from your record? Yes. After 3 years from the date of conviction, it could be expunged. If that person would apply for a license with TSPC, they could answer on their application, no, I have not been convicted. And then they also wouldn't be false swearing, because that's the crime. If you have been convicted and you say no and you sign the bottom, you have been false sworn, for which you would not be able to get a license or be an employee in a school district.
Mr. Green, thank you for the history. We appreciate it. Would you stick with us here for a while?
Sure.
We have someone else who might want to testify.
Just for the record, Chairman Buckley, members of the committee, my name is Keith Mink. I'm the Deputy Director of Teacher Standards and Practices, and I came up, but he answered the question so well, I have nothing to add.
Our favorite kind of testimony. Is there are there any other questions on the history of this law or what we're trying to accomplish here? Representative Greenlick.
Yeah, I was intrigued with my colleague here's worry about somebody who's been a prostitute later doing crimes against children of some kind, offense against children.
Well, that's not your colleague. That wasn't my concern at all.
Oh, well, then I misheard it. You didn't say that if they did something bad to children, we'd have to live with it forever or something?
No, what I said was, I think there has to be a place where we offer these people an opportunity. I'm just not sure that the first place should be the schoolhouse. If these people, the term is somewhat offensive to me. If someone has a metamorphosis and a change, and is truly trying to establish themselves as a productive member of society, I want to do that. But I also have to look at the responsibility. When Mr. Green put this law together, I remember coming from Montana where we talked about it but did nothing. And on my first opportunity to run a check through, at that time, transportation, in my first year screened out two child molesters. I couldn't believe it. But I know now why. Because we were. We were the only ones doing the screening. It was a good law. And it did what it was supposed to do. It did an excellent job. It's doing an excellent job. And I'm really not interested in chipping away at the edges right now. There's a little bit of a conflict here, but that group that put that law together put each piece in there, and I can think of no crime. I can think of no human behavior that doesn't deserve a second chance. But I don't want to start whittling away on this list today, tomorrow, or the next day. The world is an oyster. Open it up. Children are forever.
We're going to carry this over to Wednesday.
Well, let me finish my question.
Here's Green.
Yeah, I want to attribute it to...
Thank you.
This wouldn't include any pedophiles or anybody that had been convicted of a crime against children, would it?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Greenlick, if that's the type of crime, if you look down that list in ORS 342-143, if there is any sex crime involving minors, you are precluded from ever becoming a teacher in this state.
So those are felonies. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greenlick, no. You're talking about just the misdemeanor prostitution, which under current law, if the individual would go get that expunged and it was expunged from their record, then they could go ahead and get a teaching license, assuming all other things being equal, that they would pass the rest of the tests that TSBC requires of them. Or, you know, we also have certain laws regarding bus drivers in this state. There's a higher standard with those folks as well.
Right.
So, assuming all other things being equal, if someone expunges that misdemeanor from their record, they could get the license from TSBC, or they could be an employee in a school district and pass the criminal background check that the Department of Education does.
But I was talking about the specific crime that we're involved in now, the misdemeanor crime of prostitution. From the definition I have in my bill file, it sounds like it's something specifically related to behavior among adults.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Greenlitz, that's correct, because that's the misdemeanor side of prostitution. If you go into the felony side, and I haven't looked at these statutes in a while, but there are certain felony ones that involve minors, and those are total preclusionary statutory in our state.
As they should be. Representative Rubin?
So, if I understood you correctly, we can expunge the record. There's be no reason to them to ever find it. They would go on and become a teacher, possibly. I mean, they did a background check. They could answer the question. So what this law actually does is make it harder. I mean, it imposes more, because if the record is there and it was not expunged, they're going to have a hearing and a presentation and follow. TSBC has to look at that in a different way than it would if a person had been expunged.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Roblin, that may be the case, but what that would also give that opportunity for that individual. And I'm not saying we're supportive of the bill. I mean, we have a neutral position on this bill, but yes, because then the burden becomes TSBC's burden to deal with the individual and make that balancing test of whether the person is deserving of the license. If the person got the record expunged, you've heard from TSBC, and it's still true today, they wouldn't know about it.
Right.
And it's not false swearing to say they weren't convicted if that record was expunged.
Okay. Representative Dulla.
I want to ask another question. Given our Measure 11 status and given the load we have, particularly on the county attorneys that I'm familiar with, is it common in a court case to plead to a lesser charge, saving the county the court costs, and giving the criminal a lesser sentence, but a for sure sentence? And would we on occasion having people that have done heinous crimes pleading to a lesser crime, could that happen?
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Greenlick, or Representative Dahlem, excuse me, I did some criminal law in my background as an attorney, not as a defendant. Let's get this clear on the record. And yes, it is true that certain defendants do plead to lesser crimes, but when you're talking Measure 11 crimes, you plead to a lesser crime. It's still on that list of preclusionary crimes. But yes, you could plead to a lesser crime, and it would depend on whether that crime falls under the list or not.
So we could, in effect, have have people with major crimes that have pled to a lesser crime being forgiven here of a crime that was originally on the list. And this is a long shot, and I'm purposely making a long shot. But I'm going to again look at who I'm charged with protecting, and that's children.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Dahlem, that's you know, entirely possible, depending on what the crime they committed and what the lesser crime that they are being then charged with and agree to plead to, whether it falls on the list or not. That's entirely possible. When we created this law back in 1993, what we tried to do was get the really, really bad people, the ones that hurt kids, the ones that want to get it near kids. And if you talk to anybody who follows child abuse cases across the state, and my brother, who's a detective for Clackamas County, his only job is child abuse investigation. That's all he does. And what he tells me is these folks who want to get near kids will try to put themselves in positions to get near kids, which includes becoming school teachers, school bus drivers, or employees in school districts. That's why we created this law, is to keep those folks away from our kids.
Thank you.
Mr. Green, the process of expungement, can you educate us on that?
And Mr. Chairman, I'll do my best, because I did a couple of expungement cases for clients when I was in my private practice. What happens is you have to make sure that it is a crime for which expungement is allowed. Generally, misdemeanors are that level. Felonies generally don't rise to that level. What you must do is make sure that it's been 3 years since the conviction and that they haven't violated their parole, probation, or whatever the court order was. Then you file a document with the court asking for an expungement, claiming that the crime allows for expungement, and the court then issues the order. And it's all pretty much paperwork. It's never really hearing before the judge. It is pretty much filing the paperwork with the court and the order with the court, and, you know, having an affidavit there from the defendant indicating, one, I did commit the crime, two, that it's been this period since I committed the crime and the conviction, that I completed all parole, probation, and all release issues, and that I have not committed any other crimes in the time in which since conviction. And you make that affidavit to the judge looks at it, he or she then signs the order.
And it is fairly routinely...
Mr. Chairman, yes, it's fairly routinely. For those crimes with which expungement is allowed, yes, it's fairly routinely done. What happens, unfortunately, and I think if you ask TSPC or Deborah Lincoln, who I know is in the back of the room from the Department of Education, who does this stuff for the Department of Education, people think they get their record expunged just because it's been 3 years from conviction. That is not the case. You must actually file the paperwork and get the order from the judge in order to have expungement. And I think what you have happen a lot of times is an individual believes, because, hey, it's been 5 years since that conviction for a misdemeanor, it's been expunged, and they sign that no, they have not been convicted. Well, then they are signing the document, I think as Representative Krummel told you at the bottom, their applications for license or application for employment in a school district, that then creates the crime of false swearing.
Yeah.
That then becomes a preclusionary crime again.
Gotcha. Thank you. Mr. Green, thank you so much for your time. I greatly appreciate you joining the conversation. Any further Mr. questions,
sure.
Representative Krummel?
Thank you. Okay, so now...
the rest of the story?
Does Mr. Green, does the court do a... When a court gets the affidavit for an expungement, does the court do a background check just to check and make sure that, in fact, the person hasn't been convicted of anything else and they're not just sort of pulling this court's leg? Or does the court say, oh yeah, okay, well, looks good to us, and
boom. Mr. Chairman, Representative Krummel, again, this was when I was doing practice. Mm-hmm. They would in fact do that. As a matter of fact, it was also, I took it upon myself as an attorney representing the defendant to make sure that in fact had not occurred, because I'm also signing that document as their lawyer saying their statement is true. That then becomes a crime for me as an attorney in signing that document. So, yeah, the court does check that, because they can go to a LEDS check real quick, the law enforcement data system check, very quick. It's a name, social security, date of birth check, essentially. And they'll check that out.
Thank you. Any further questions of this panel? Seeing none, thank you so much, gentlemen. Appreciate your time and your consideration. Are there any, is there anyone else here who cares to testify on this bill? Hearing none. Members, this is a public hearing. This is our last bill of the session, members, and it's a great one to be able to end up on. Very fascinating. We have one more hearing on Wednesday, May 30th. Representative Krummel and Representative Barker have been working on a proposed amendment to add a background check for volunteers and anyone who has basically direct contact with children.
Yes.
And it would, and it would in fact be a LEDS and a finger card FBI background check.
And what I'd like to do, members, just so you know, is to work with Representative Crummell, Representative Barker, and other interested folks on that amendment over the next few days. We'll skip the weekend. So on Wednesday, we will be able to come back for a public hearing and a work session on the bill and the amendment. And that's the intention of the chair, just to let you know. And with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 724. Are there any other announcements? Vice Chair Kopp?
It's not necessarily an announcement, but I wanted to reopen, ask that the rules be suspended and allow Representative Dahlem and Representative Clem to vote on Senate Bill 755A as recommended.
Vice Chair Kopp moves that the rules be suspended and that Representative Clem and Representative Dahlem be allowed to vote on Senate Bill 755A as amended.
They're trying to object.
We have to think about it.
I was out fighting. I was fighting math.
you're fighting math.
I was really preserving the Oregon Trail.
Okay.
In that case, we don't object.
We don't object.
Without objection, the motion carries. Open up a work session on Senate Bill 755A. Representative Clem, how do you vote?
Aye.
Representative Dahlem, how do you vote?
I want to be absolutely certain that there's some carryover of board members and that amendment was approved.
Yes, that was.
Aye. I vote aye.
Only in Northwest. The other regions.
Thank you. Your votes are noted. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 775A. Any further announcements, Representative or Representative Mr. Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As Chair said, we'll carry over Senate Bill 724A for Wednesday, May 30th at 1 p.m. in the same hearing room D. If I could just ask the interested parties to come back for the work session.
Mr. Green's had enough.
And we will not be having a meeting on Tuesday or Thursday, so barring unforeseen circumstances, that should be the last meeting of the Education Committee.
When is that?
On Wednesday, May 30th, 1 p.m. in Hearing Room D.
Members, the Speaker has advised us, even when we're done with our bills, to think about one or two meetings during June where a subject. I would like to get the Oregon Progress Board come and give their report on education. If there are other items of interest for the committee, of course these will not be mandatory meetings, but I'd like to be able to make the use of the time, if we have it when we do not have floor sessions, to actually continue the discussion on education in our state. So with that, thank you very much for your time and attention. We are adjourned.
See you Tuesday.
So, Representative.